Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
We'll be right back.
Good evening. BASN Newsroom is on the air. Good evening and welcome to Soul Tree Radio. I'm your host, Michael Littlefingerman, and as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio on the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com, .net, and .org. All members of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right here, right now, at www.BASNNewsroom, allonephrase.com, .net, .org. We got it all covered. Excuse my feedback here. Anyway, the show tonight, we are down to the final four, and we have the San Francisco 49ers against the Putty Tats. The Putty Tats made it. Unbelievable. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes makes his sixth, not one, not two, like LeBron, sixth straight conference final against Lamar Jackson, who should be MVP this year, and the Baltimore Ravens. With me, as always, my right-hand man, Gary North Gray, my other brother, Tony McClain, will be coming in shortly, along with Patrick Farrar and the rest of the crew. And Tony, or rather Gary, before I go any further, just want you to know, as we speak, BASN is now 25 years old.
Yeah.
It was around this time back then I first discovered BASN through Tony, and then, of course, met you and everyone else. It's been an amazing 25-year journey. We're still here. Ironically, we have technicians working on the site as we speak right now, but I just want your take on how it has been for the past 25 years to this journey in BASN.
Well, I can remember 25 years ago sending articles to Roy Rogers.
Uh-huh.
And Roy Rogers called me up and said, why don't you just join the that? I said, no, I don't want to do that. This is in April.
Yep, I'm making 89.
This is April, but by the time November came around, he said, you're joining the staff. I said, okay, I'll join the staff.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I became a member of the BASN Network.
I got Tony on the line with us and whatnot, and Tony, you would know better than all of us, you being here at the very beginning. BASN 25 years old now. First, how do you feel about that, and give me an overview of what the journey has been for you.
So 25, so what's the gift for the 25th anniversary? Silver, gold, I forget which one it is. But, never turn down that, of course. You know, as is with so many things, it began with a Google search. I was just, you know, on the internet, you know, just roaming as my want to do a lot of times, and I literally stumbled on the site. I took a look at it. I saw some of the articles. Gary's articles was on there. A bunch of other things, and our founder, one of our founders, Roland Rogers, I corresponded with him. I just said, hey, I like your site. if you're looking for writers, you know, let me know. And, you know, I guess within, say, a couple of days, you know, Roland got back with me. And we, you know, we had a, you know, we talked for about a good half hour, 45 minutes. And I did a, the first write-up that I did for BASN was, it was an analogy of Jake LaMotta, Sonny Liston, and Mike Tyson.
Wow.
And it was, you know, if you remember, I know all of us have seen the movie Raging Bull. That's still one of my favorite sports movies.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. But it's so, you know, if you remember, and again, if you have seen the movie, I'm sure a lot of us who are sports fans or boxing fans as well have seen the movie numerous times. And there was an article that came out, and I'm dating myself here. If you remember the old publication Inside Sports,
I do remember that.
There was an article written about Jake LaMotta. It was called, I think it was like Tears for the Devil, the article. And basically, they, in a sense, they were humanizing, trying to, you know, in a sense, humanize Jake LaMotta. And it struck a chord, in a sense, because it goes back to something that we've always hit on in regards to our writings, whether it be football, baseball, basketball, or what have you. And it sort of coincides with, you know, how the black athlete is depicted in either mainstream or non-mainstream media.
Right.
You know, one of our things has always been the black athlete is the most imitated and innovative being in all of sports, whether it be pro sports,
Amen.
College sports, or what have you. I say all that to that. What got me was that, and look, we all know that Jake LaMotta wasn't, you know, and the movie clearly depicted Jake LaMotta was a slug. Just to be nice. I mean, there's a few other words we could, you know, say, but I know whatever. But it always struck me that there was always sort of a sympathetic ear for a Jake LaMotta, but meanwhile, guys like a Sonny Liston at the height of his career was not well liked, and we all know also the same dichotomy with Mike Tyson.
And they were both demonized. Yes.
Exactly. And again, make a long story short, it always struck me that even though LaMotta's story was out there and it was, you know, pretty much public domain and everything like that, there was always a sympathetic thing toward Jake LaMotta. Meanwhile, Mike Tyson and Sonny Liston were looked upon as just, you know, lifeless
humans.
I agree.
And ironically, when that story got first published, it was seen by a common friend of ours, a guy by the name of Reggie Howell, who at the time was running Sports Talk on 1450 WCLM. And he emailed me saying, I liked your article. Would you like to come on and talk about it? And I said, sure. And needless to say, that was one of, like, the leads to a bunch of friendships and interactions that have sustained basically since, I guess I want to say 2002, 2003 or so. Eventually I met Gary, Mike, of course, was well documented. We actually met through an article of mine, a hockey article where I said that Jerome McGinley was the first black captain in NHL history. But of course, that wasn't correct. It was Dirk Graham back in the day with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Okay.
And see, now someone in another frame of life might have been like, who's he to tell me what I'm thinking? But I was like, oh, okay. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad I know that now. And see, that's always been my thing with what we do. It's that old KRS-One line of, you know, infotainment, in a sense.
Exactly.
And, you know, we will correspond online, and then eventually I think I forget which draft that we finally physically met. And, you know, needless to say, I haven't been able to get rid of you guys since
that time.
But I can remember the many phone calls between, we had a conference calls on Wednesday, Thursday night. Every Wednesday, Thursday night, we made these 2 hour conference calls.
My thing has always been, I wish I was smart enough to tape or record some of our
calls back
in the day, because those, you know, needless to say, those would be epic books to write about because of so many of the things that we talked about or would discuss or whatever, things that we fall back on. I don't know if fall back on is the right word to say, but I think you understand. But this is, we still reference it today. Think of the minions that we have introduced ourselves to over the years. just folks within the industry. That, you know, Mike always references the Brother Man Network. The Brother Man Network grows every day.
Yeah, and
I guess the Sisterhood Network too, if you want to, you know, if you want to throw that in there as well. And see, to me, that's been the most richest thing. Now, you know, full disclosure, and I think all, you know, we haven't made a whole lot of money doing this. You know, we've been able to make, like the old Richard Pryor line. We made some twos and fews along the way, but, you know, nothing where we could sort of sit back and retire and what have you. But that being said, what we didn't do monetarily, we have more than made up for professionally.
Because
our influence is still there, you know, either directly or indirectly. And again, the relationships over the years, you know, some of the people who we've touched and have touched us along the way, money can't buy that. And it's a sort of thing where I think I value, out of all the things that we've done over the years, the articles, the talk shows, the conference calls, the going to different games, different venues, and what have you. I think I value those probably more than anything else. And so much of, you know, I don't want to go too long, because I knew we got a time constraint. But so much of what we've done and are still doing can never really be taught like in a classroom per se. It can never really be cultivated in, like, say, a book, a video, a movie, or what have you. It has to be experienced. And
I'm with you.
It's so much of what, you know, even from the way we even observe sports now, you know,
Very different now.
I still get a kick, you know. I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you guys experienced this as well. And matter of fact, I know I have, because I know a lot of times you guys will be the ones that do the calling as well. There isn't too many months or days where I will get a random call from someone. Hey, so-and-so and such-and-such, when did he play? Who did he play for? what, you know, it's literally like the scene from the Flintstones, you know. What's your name? I'll buy that. And it's always like it's always sort of sports related. And see, you know, back in the day, you know, the internet is still a baby compared to, like, you know, our old ways of looking up research, you know, encyclopedias, magazines. It's ironic that SI is closing down, because if someone had told us back in the day that at some point Sports Illustrated would become obsolete, we might have looked at them a little funny. But the thing is, that's the crazy part. A lot of stuff in this industry now has basically become passé. I was more of a sporting news guy than I was Sports Illustrated. A lot of it had to do with baseball, and because of the fact that between me, Gary, you, and the other 18 black people that actually follow baseball on a that was our Bible. And yeah, you know, we always reference SI, but not to go on too longer. I think, again, to me, the greatest thing that I still get a kick out of, I thought, are the relationships. There are some folks over the years we have not physically met, but we're joined at the hip. When I mess around and text Gary Elvis Presley's Viva Las Vegas the day that the Raiders I wasn't messing with him to be mean or whatever. It was that was just our way, you know. That was just our way that we did things and still do things as well.
I have to say BASN is definitely the tie that bound us, because I didn't discover you until 2005, but after Tony and I hooked up, reading BASN's site was like reading the morning paper. I couldn't wait until I saw who wrote what. As we talked about articles on sports, different sports, and different personalities, and the people who contributed and what they had to say. I was truly fascinated by it, and I enjoyed it. I have my man Patrick Farrar with us here, and Patrick, we are not only celebrating BASN's 25th year, but how everyone has hooked themselves up in connecting with each other. Patrick and I have known each other at least that long. And we met through that universal nod that the brothers give when we're covering football, covering the Jets and the Giants at the Meadowlands. Good evening, my brother.
Yeah, can you guys hear me? I'm in the car. I just finished the game, the Seton Hall game.
We can hear you.
They had a problem with me, but the best play got hurt. And they lost by 4 points. And they lost a tough one on Saturday, too. That was on national television. So, it's been a minute since, we've got to have this conversation. And I look forward to every week, because when you're around, like, guys around the night, some weak-ass white boys, you know, who think they know everything. And half of them don't want to speak to you. And the other half, I don't really give a fuck about speaking to me out of life.
There you go.
But there's some that you deal with that are genuine, and that's the nature of that room. And unfortunately, that room tonight, I was the only goddamn one in the press box, in the post game press box. And I say that out of sheer disgust. Where are the young brothers? I mean, there's some brothers out there doing stuff. But they don't get into the grind to stay at it, to get a position to be in it. You know, they wanted to be like, microwave connections. You know, white boys got it, but some of us don't really work at it. And but I'm glad to have this because it's an outlet for me to understand, to express some frustration, but also insight on what we know, what we think. As Americans, opinions and the facts are two different things.
You got that right. Yeah. I believe the one thing that I've gotten most, other than the connection with the brothers and sisters, thank you, Ron and Bobby Booker and Celeste, was the fact that the politics of sports really came out in its rawest, most naked form. We saw how the corporate world took sports, how it used sports, and how certain writers used their bully pulpits as bylines, doing what they're doing to attack people. You know, we've seen that from a white side. We've seen it from a black side. Stephen A. Smith, you fucking prick. And we've seen how they tried to make character assassinations de rigueur for black athletes. And Black Athlete Sports Network, blackathlete.com, at the time was the only voice to say, no, we ain't having that. Because objectivity was the one thing that was missing. Tony talked about the Nevada and Liston and Tyson comparisons. And we know Tyson and Liston were given certain mentalities and looked at a certain way. And that's never changed. And as they fell into their types, they suffered. And there was no recourse for them other than to keep on suffering because no one would speak for them. No one understood the level of politics that was running against them. And that's what BASN did in speaking up for black athletes and making sure that they just didn't say any old shit. Somebody was going to be held accountable. And we've been in situations where we had to hold people in check. And we did hold people in check. And when they tried to do the same thing, they couldn't because they had no ammunition. We had them with facts. And we all know facts are the disinfectant that kills bullshit and everything else under the sun. And for 25 years, we keep on doing this shit.
And, Mike, let me add this. Technology has turned this shit all the way around. Because believe me, there are some white boy writers who are pissed as hell that the brothers figured out to use the technical equipment to express himself. Believe me.
Yeah.
Let me give a perfect example. Tonight, the game, they lost, and Shahid Holloway, the guy came asking the same question, why top one player wasn't playing. He says, I don't know. He said, big dog. I done told two guys the same thing. What, are you going to change my answer? Now, you know they're going to write that. Somebody's going to write tomorrow. You know, he was a little testy. He was a little. No! Don't have to say any questions. He's not going to tell you. He ain't going to tell you. You know, somebody might say something on the internet through the screen, but them days are getting things out of everybody because you want to make the story, whether you like it or not, or form the way you like it or not. Them days is over, bruh, because the get back is really got the podcast, and they're going to say, well, that sucker don't know what the hell he was talking about. And that's what she said tonight. I'm going to write what you want to write, but I'm telling you now what's going on. Hey, that's the difference now.
You know, think about this, Mike, and the piggyback on what Patrick was saying in regards to technology. Now, think of where we were when BASN, began. You know, the internet was pretty much, the internet had really become what it is, even bigger than what it is. But see, think about who were, think about the relationship between the press and the black athlete. And one of the things that Roland tried to do, and I think I will give him this much credit, I give him credit that he was ahead of the game in this, he always tried to give athletes, either past, present, or future athletes, a forum.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt like, you know, we all, you know, and Patrick, you know, we've all talked about how the white, you know, white established media or white owned media has always had their bully pulpit. And there was never really a way for athletes to, you know, even up the playing field. And now,
mm-hmm.
think about this now. I mean, you can make the argument, Shannon Sharp, to a certain extent right now, to a certain, you know, is in a sense, is the number one media guy right now. And it's, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's a former athlete. But also,
yes,
a lot of it has to do with the fact that, number one, he cultivated his career as an athlete into this, and
yes,
and literally and figuratively has used it for good. And it's not just about sports, as the Cat Williams phenomenon attests to it. And you see things like a couple weeks ago, you know, Cam Newton made a comment in regards to Brock Purdy and some of the other white quarterbacks who they have basically anointed as the next ones. And that's a two-hour conversation in and of itself. But you literally had the white media doing the same old thing of basically trying to say, how is he qualified? He's not qualified to say that. And just think about this.
Oh, he's going to be a former MVP.
Mm-hmm. He's an MVP. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. I feel like at some point he should get some kudos for being a Hall of Famer as well. He actually played the damn game.
Hello.
He knows what it is. He knows what it is to see the Tampa 2 up close.
Yep.
He knows what it is to have to, you know, to be physical. He knows what it is to be the big man on campus, to be the guy. But some guy, you know, who in his own mind's eye thinks that he knows better than somebody who's actually played the game, and that he would actually go after him. But see, back in the day, Cam wouldn't have been able to have that forum to say, hey, you need to, you know, to be able to clap back on him. And see, I always go back to one of my guys who I won't say I idolized, but I admired him as I was coming up into the in my career, and that was Howard Cosell. And it's interesting that, you know, those last years of Cosell when he was prominent, it was almost like watching the last days of the Nixon White House, where he just got so damn, you know, and Cosell used to go on and on about the Jock Opposition. And remember, you know, one of his best-selling books was I Never Played the Game. And it's interesting to me because the very same people who sort of hated Cosell, they didn't hate him, they were jealous of him because he was able to have the forum. See, he was at a time, you know, he was pre-ESPN, he was pre-internet, but he was always there, whether it was Monday Night Football or whether it was the big fight or whether it was the World Series or the playoffs. Cosell was always there. He was one of the first guys that had his own, like, 2-3 minute talk thing. You know, Cosell, I listened to a religion. This is how Cosell speaks in sports.
Yeah.
Five minutes every day, he would do his little commentary. He would get his digs in and everything like that. And to this day, he is still the only guy who was the most liked sports personality of all and the most hated personality of all.
Definitely. Uh-huh.
And it's interesting. I wonder if Cosell, if you know, and again, you know, we always like to make comparisons and everything like that, but I wonder how Cosell would be looked upon if he was in this generation now with the social media and everything else.
There'll be some unique dimensions to it. Believe me.
Yeah. You tend to think that it would be similar, but with different ramifications, strictly because
there's an aspect, Tony, not to cut you off, but there's an aspect to the Cosells and the dichotomy between them and, say, Stephen A. Smith. There was a line that wasn't crossed. There was a line that was filled with anger and with resentment, because most of these guys, as Cosell said, never played the game, but it's because they couldn't play the fucking game. And then to make it worse,
and there was a respect. And Cosell has respect, and he earned that too. That's the difference.
Well, one thing Cosell said that I never forgot was when he said, anybody who thinks that Muhammad Ali isn't the champion should step in the ring with him. And I said, you know what? You're so right. That's on point. But the bottom line is we've gone from that to Stephen A. Smith daring Kevin Durant to open his mouth because, in his own words, I will destroy you. Who the fuck do you think you are, you little punk bitch, that you, who couldn't play fucking basketball, who was given a break by the great coach. I'm sitting there thinking about it. It just makes me mad thinking about it. And then you went out your way to go and, as some people say, show up, because you're a black man in an industry where you have a lot of juice, and you go after these people for the specific reason of believing that you could. And I never liked that. I never will like it. With great power comes great responsibility, like the old Spider-Man comic says, and he's wasted both of them. Stephen A. Smith is a waste of space. And
I find it so interesting that he and Professor Lardbutt, Mr. Whitlock,
were
sort of going at each other. But see, here's the funny thing to me. We're both the same.
When you keep biting the hand that feeds you, you keep biting, I'll tell you, they're going to eat you alive. So
it's literally a slow burn with chestnuts roasting on an open fire without Santa Claus. But the thing
I would say it's not that they're biting the hand that feeds them. It's like they're stoking the fires of discontent, and they're working for tea white supremacy. You didn't see how much resentment and how much hatred there was for black athletes, male and female, that came out through writers and through the media in their different forms in making sure that their accomplishments, even if they were elevated by their performances right then and there, got downgraded. And as soon as they did not perform up to standard. They took them down with a viciousness and attitude that was unparalleled society-wise when it came to the culture. With us, among us, is our brother Fred Witter, the professor. You know, I've known Professor now for over 20 years. I've never met him, and I still feel connected at the hip because, as Tony says, we have walked the same path together. His brand of humor always makes me smile because his folks are down to earth, and he's taught me how to learn to look at things from a different viewpoint. He's a critical thinker, and I find that most assuredly the professor, when he speaks from a point of wisdom because he's been there. And Professor, I just want to say it's been an awesome trip with you. Good evening. And we're celebrating BSN's 25th birthday and, of course, our association with the show. And good evening.
Good evening. I heard you all, shall we say, dissing Telegram. We don't play that.
I'm gonna take an exception. He deserves it. He deserves every bit of it.
Tony, you've been down here. You know how we roll.
I know what you're saying, but I stand by it. I mean, I know he's done some wonderful things. Given back to the school, especially in the journalism department and everything like that, and it's very, very commendable. But you know, I just there's still just something, you know, to paraphrase my man on King of the Hill, that boy ain't right.
See, now you know why I don't watch cartoons. Or whatever they're called now. here's where we, as professional, whatever we are, have to read between the lines, and because the whole world of journalism itself ain't what it used to be.
That's
because of that, the rules have changed. Shall we say the landscapes have changed, although the rules have not necessarily changed to go with it. You know, I'm watching a game from about 15 years ago, 2 days ago, and you know they hit the quarterback.
Yes, they did.
If you go back a few years, one of the quarterbacks that you all love to hate, Terry Bradshaw, did not finish the Super Bowl. I think it was two or three. Somebody, it wasn't him. He was saying recently on a broadcast, I didn't know where I was until basically after dark. Sometime during the night, he woke up and he's like, "Hey, the bed's not spinning anymore." Whatever. Mm-hmm. So. You know, again, the ground rules are not what they used to be. And unfortunately, we still have the same expectations. Think about what we're doing right here, right now. 20 years ago, could we do this? No.
No.
I don't care what Stephen A. or that dude who's the only guy I know that sits on a couch by himself and sinks in. But anyway, people like, you know, it's interesting to me because, see, you know, I tried watching Club Shay Shay. I don't get it. You know, I actually watched a video of our lieutenant governor the other day talking, and he is so over the hill that it's pathetic. But there again, he's a politician. you know, these shows that we have now are basically the same as watching Rin Tin Tin or Roy Rogers or whatever. It's a show. And that's how I receive it. It's a show. Because there's nothing about them that is all that much truth. It's not newsy, you know. We're not going back to Robinson or David Brinkley or any of the old heads that we grew up, you know,
right.
We grew up with.
Yeah.
You know, they will be going down and bum rushing the studio because you just don't do this kind of thing. You see, all this. I'm a journalist. That's all part of the show. It has nothing to do with, you know, realistic. You know, I took my first class in journalism in the 12th grade. They, you know, literally, based on what I see on these shows, a little bit that I do watch, this would be a good place to, you know, burn some people at the stake because they are just not what they're supposed to be. The rules have changed to a point where basically there ain't no rules.
And it's
really sad because you have a society that is built around that same edict. There ain't no rules. So the rules, the rules don't apply to me. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say this and finish. I saw a perfect example of that today.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of, here in Fayetteville, we have a lot of corners. If you run the light, it's like old-fashioned flash bulbs. It lights up. And today, guess what happened? Not only did it light up, second car in line to make a U-turn was a cop. And guess what? Homeboy got pulled over. We got 100 yards. And what do we say? White guy, get out. You know, and you know, whites are the only ones who get out at a traffic stop.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rules are still the same on certain things. Brothers just don't do that. You see, as much as I appreciate Stephen A. and Shay Shay and all these other shows, I treat them as shows. You know what has Oakland Chico really contributed? I mean, you know, and I don't say this because he played with the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't say this because I look at him as an enemy. I'm still trying to figure out what he contributed to the sport.
Well, Fred,
and what he got to talk about.
Fred, you know what it comes down to? I think Patrick hit it on the head. It's the technology. The technology has now made it available for us to equalize the playing field by saying, this is how we feel about it. And you know what? Come back with your facts. Otherwise, we're going to call you out for being incorrect, motherfucker. And that's
every
exactly
single time.
Right. Some
every
of this
single
stuff
time. Every single
Eric
time.
We have Eric Satterwhite with us and in celebrating BASN 25 years, I gotta say, I smile when I think about Eric and the first time we talked because he was coming from a totally different place. When Eric talked, it was not just subject and predicate. He would go off into several different levels and then come right back to where he was and say, there you go, there's a thought for you. And it was stuff like that kept us going during the dark times after Roland Rogers passed away. And it kept us focused on where we were and how we are now with BASN. And I thank you for it then. I thank you for it now. And I appreciate the fact, Eric, that you were there and that we're still here talking about this and staying focused and staying on code with what's important to us and the culture. And good evening.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Wow, yeah, thank you for that. Heartfelt, man. You know, I reciprocate that, you know, 24/7, 365 and beyond, you know, because it's beyond the calendar date. You know, I mean, just weighing in on the new sitcoms that we see. You know, we have the new, you know, Jimmy J.J. Walker. They just show up on sports television shows. You know, we have this is sitcom shit, you know. And at no point should anyone tiptoe and call in the truth. Under no circumstance, regardless of the university affiliation, regardless of the ethnic affiliation, regardless of the code, if it's truth, it's truth in 2024. And it's nothing to tiptoe about anymore. We've done enough tiptoeing and hiding and protecting behind shenanigans and also, you know, being beholden to people who may have broke us off something or allowed us to get on a certain network that we don't know about or sharing information to help boost their bullshit. We know how that works in real life. So if a brother sees something that ain't correct and calls it on it, call it. You know, Oprah Winfrey is a Tennessee State grad. You know, I met Oprah. You know, she's, you know, I don't know if you can get larger than Oprah. And from a money standpoint, from an influence standpoint, from an HBCU standpoint, graduate, right? And from a hype standpoint, correct? And yet, I don't ride with everything that Ms. Winfrey does. You know what I mean? I don't ride with certain things. Are we proud? Yeah, but we're not going to just lay down our consciousness because this person's affiliated with a university. You know, if you're a clown, you're a clown, period. And you make yourself another clown when you affiliate with a clown. You know what I mean? If you want to rogue with clowns because there's some kind of affiliation thing, I mean, there's cats at Tennessee State breaking and entering and shit, you know, football players at the time. We weren't riding with that. I won't call them out by name. You hear what I'm saying? But at the same time, we're not going to do this blanket thing because it doesn't work in real life. If we had the same blanket approach for everyone in any of our whole entire family, and yet if we see the most talented or a person who goes to places and you don't throw one scintilla of light in bringing them to the forefront, you are a punk bitch. Right? I'm sorry. That's what you are. You know what I mean? Because you really aren't riding with the code. You know what I mean? As you say you are, because if someone in this affiliation, I get a call, and so, hey, man, that show you was on, you know, Brother Michael Ingram, you got kind of, I like to talk to him. I'm giving up the digits, non-hesitance, no hesitation. Right? Frey writes a book, I'm putting out the word. I'm buying them. You know, proof is proof. You know, so in other words, we're not riding 24/7 with the fact of the brother Roland Rogers. Yes, true. I worked with him really closely up until his death. You know, I still have the emails, the communications, the plans, the go-aheads in my archives. What people don't know about someone like Roland, I can produce this 24/7 because I have it in my archives, is that when we were doing a business relationship early on, and we were talking about several different things about the network, his goals, his future, which I won't get into. I'll talk to the brothers on the side, but I'm not trying to build someone who can listen to a good business plan because it wasn't for them. But his concept was this. Because he was into astronomy, the stars, the celestial bodies, not fake astronomy, not like, you know, read the New York Post and find what it says under Aquarius astronomy, real dialed in knowingness of the celestial bodies, right, which is part of our natural nature, right? We design a pyramid force on the continent of what they call Africa that aligns to the Orion star system. As above, so below. They call people who can play superstars, right? So it's always a celestial interconnection that we are privy to. We're in a full moon energy environment right now, right? That's tomorrow night. But the energy's building out right now. We live by these codes. Reagan was running the country on astrology, wasn't he? It's all been proven. He was consulting an astrologist. So what did he know? You know what I mean? You know, he wasn't space. He was running the game because there's some truth to what. Now, you other ambassadors were tiptoeing around that who go to the university and don't know nothing about the dang universe. You have failed. Sorry, you just got a little paper, but you didn't get universal knowledge, universal wisdom, 360 degrees above, 360 degrees below, 720 degrees perfect window. Square that, you get 1440, and it's a whole other realm on the 1440 side. But now you can research it because you just got tipped off. So back to the point. He did something where, which is the most unique format, he did an astrological chart on the birthday of Black Athlete Sports Network and my birthday, and did a whole cosmic chart of how we would relate together in the business environment. Never seen anything like that since. He did the actual birthday of BASN and did some an astrological chart of how the business relevance of Black Athlete Sports Network would work with the, me working with him from a business standpoint. And it was laid out. It was like 6 pages.
Wow.
All right. Yes. And then one day I'll share an excerpt. I'll be glad to share an excerpt. Not about me. It's never about me. It's about what the brother stood for and how he interconnected, and how if he was going to go to an in-depth business relationship with someone, he wanted to see how it aligned with the celestial bodies. That's what Roland Rogers was, unbeknownst to the masses. All right? So I'm saying that to say, I had thought about this before, maybe I'll email the brothers, you know, T-Max, brothers in the mix. You can see it. It's awesome. It's beautiful. And I was like, and it was and well broken down, right? It gets into the degrees of stuff. It's just not no surface view, you know, thing. But he has this understanding, uncanny wisdom of our indigenous knowledge systems. Ooh, what's that?
No doubt.
Indigenous knowledge system, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Off the continent and shit? Right.
That's
so all you Freemason Punanis out there and all that other bullshit, you're playing with child's play. That's nothing. No show. All right? For those who know, I mean, in terms of being, like, initiated in certain cultures and certain societies where in the initiation, the uninitiated never likes this kind of information. They never like truth like this. But, brother, speak your truth. If there's someone on television, tell lies visually, television, tell love vision, tell lies visually. That's what it's symbolic of. So when you do the tell lies visually thing, and we see these clowns coming on, buffooning and doing the buffoonery and all the different things that they're doing, the brothers here with some heart, with some courage, with some backbone, with some warrior spirit, with some real Zulu in them, you know, I mean, who can take mofos on with spears and shit, right, over guns, and comes in and makes a genetic analysis of the garbage they see, please continue to make analysis of the garbage you see. Ashe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can't make it more simple than that. Unfortunately, we know the landscape isn't built like that, and too many walk away from it, or they won't even walk toward it because they know the power of it, and they're scared. You know,
perfect.
And just like my man said in The Matrix, the first thing that you have to do is to shed your fear of what society brings towards you and admit that it's there and you can let that pass through you. Unfortunately, there ain't that many brothers that's built like that anymore. And the ones that are, they're usually operating by themselves or in small groups. And collectively, that power hasn't been coalesced into something that says, we got this. And at least in the same frame of saying we got this is an entity that will say, in terms of the Black Athlete, you're not going to have this one. You're not going to come up with preconceived notions of who these people are. We're going to let them speak, and we're going to let them fight back the best way they know how, with their talent, and let that speak for itself. And that way it leaves no doubt as to who they are and what they are. And at the end, you end up flat footed because you have nothing of value to put out there. And that's essentially what Black Athletes do. That's what HBCU athletes did on the collegiate level. That's what they did on the pro level. That's what female athletes did and got highlighted whenever the Olympics was put out there in front of us. You know we do this. We know we do this. And unfortunately, we're not reminded often enough as to how awesome that really is. And that is the reason why a BASN needs to exist and continue to thrive in the midst of fighting the chaos that comes 24/7, 365, because these folks are butthurt at the notion that they can't do what we do. You know?
You just said it, though, Mike. You just covered it. You literally covered what the reality is. It's this thing, you know, out here, I'm going to take it out here today because I'm feeling that vibe. I mean, it's a thing called quantum entanglement, right, and quantum physics and quantum holographic world, okay, because you mentioned the Matrix. If you want to get quantum entangled in bullshit, every corridor available that's called bullshit will be your existence. Right, because now you're quantumly entangled in a multidimensional person, right? Double slit test. If you don't observe it, it doesn't exist, right? So the moment you observe it, you participate in it, you can go down that rabbit hole. It does not mean that if I talk to a person in a different realm of that ideology that I'm quantumly entangled to his stuff. I can still hold my space no matter what and operate in a multidimensional level. Beyond time and space, yes, beyond time and space. So when you start talking about, you know, they have to time you. So if Usain Bolt runs a certain way, you have to set the spectrum for him. Okay, it's 100 meters. This is your lane. This is your block. This is what you do. So he gets quantumly entangled and they're under 10-second threshold for a certain kind of race. Now, if you open that space up and don't put limitations on time and clocks, and what records are, he may run it in 7 seconds.
Thank you.
Okay, so they've shifted the initiative. Same thing with sports. Here's your distance, 94 foot 6 inches, 10 foot high rims. So the spectrum's been chased to operate within that box. So you can control the box. You can control the box with a 24-second clock. You can control the box with a field goal percentage behind this certain line or this for a certain percentage. And if you do this, so all that's a containment, right? So when you are going into a contained environment and shift the initiative and play within that box in a non-level physical thing, even though you're operating physically, you're operating in different spheres. That's what the greats do. You can't time all these punches in this quickness. You didn't master it. The moment he tries to conform, that's it. Earl Gardner mastered pianist. He cannot play a note of music. He sat on like 3 phone books. He's operating in the quantum space. Coltrane was operating in the quantum space. So that's why they say, what is this shit? They called it jazz. That's what's from jazz. They were operating the quantum sphere, right? So that's the thing. But then they had to drug it up. Most of them brothers got caught up in narcotics because they weren't trained and initiate how to manage that on their nervous system. So they sought substance elsewhere, and they did certain things differently, and we see it the same way. So even though we're moving in your circles, your rule book, your guidelines, your core group, we're still operating at different times, space, and sphere. So they'll continue to trap you down, so they'll try to trap you down monetarily and physically and tell you how to dress, all those levels of control. But again, you still can operate out that space and time if you do so. And when you coaches like Coach McGlynn, they had something called a fast break. Fast break was moving at a different ratio of speed. Had nothing to do with that level, nothing to do with a shot clock. There were no shot clocks back then. It was moving in an ethereal level. That's what they can't get. That's the disdain they have for the person that he didn't leave the code for them to master that shit. I just told a little portion of what that was about. And it was the same kind of concept with the Tiger Bells and the speed function. They were operating at different time and space. Yes, they may have operated with a clock to time their speed levels, but the way that they moved motivationally was outside of that. And again, this is not for the uninitiated if you can't get it. But it's no way you can't reason with it. I'm out.
And that's the same thing happened. Mike, that's the same thing. I was talking to a young lady today. She's working on something.
What's
in
up, Patrick?
Well, I knew a fellow. She's playing piano, and we're doing the thing on the Black History Month. And she took, of all people, Nat King Cole.
Right.
And that being called from Nature Boy. So what I had her do was had her look at Nature Boy. I said, "No, you have to realize that's not what his really profound expression is. It's piano. As he plays piano.
That's right.
So I had her look at the Nat King Cole Trio from 1944. guitar, a drum, and just knocking cold. And his execution on the fingers was phenomenal. Now, while I was going on, I was tapping my foot at the pace. So when the music, when it was over, he said, "Oh, he plays fast." I said, "No, what that is? Because you guys today, your ears have slowed down. You can't even comprehend the pace he's at because all the things that you're running now have slowed you down."
It's digital. Well, it's digital sound. I mean, sound. I can go into sound like that at different spaces. But I'm not going to do that tonight. You know, we're already moving in the ethers. We'll stay in the ethers. We're not going to get out the ethers tonight. So what happens with that is, to your point, it's not analog. It's digital, right? So those brothers recorded in analog, right? Tapes, wax, what have you. Reel to reels. Remember the reel to reels? You know what I mean? That you can type the real to real. Right. Listen, I mean, eternal being, bro. Eternal being, eternal being. Eternal being, my brother. You know what I mean? The science of immortality, man. These ancestors live within me. I'll call them up. And absolutely, I'll be an old soul, a veteran soul, a universal soul. You know what I mean? No question about that. But moving to the speed of sound again, just on to keep our rhythm rolling, if you look at motion pictures, they still show movies on reels, correct? When they ship those movie theaters, they run reels. They do not run, right, a digital concept. They're reel to reels. Those reels get to rolling, right? When they update films, turn a classic movie, that stuff where they have that big film done, they do film methodology, and don't they do microfiche at, like, the Library of Congress, correct? So they're still using the real McCoy, the analog, all right? And that's why you're right about the digital. Now, most people, young people, let's see, what are we, 2023? Someone born in 1990 may have never heard anything ever analog. It's all been digital for them.
True.
They've never heard anything analog, you know, and
they
so – but when they do, they fall asleep, you know, I mean, all the time. It's like we'd have a car full of players, and I'm with a brother's got a reel-to-reel tape, man. We're going out to Frisco to play in the summer years back. Got players on there, and they're all digital. Man, you put on some just Billy Paul or whomever you want to, that's, I don't care what level of analog it is, they fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's subtle. Mm-hmm. You know, they fall asleep because it's a harmonic there that they were born to, that their parents connected to. That still resides in a mitochondria portion of their cellular structure, which also shows those telomeres, which shows how you do the age lengthening. It's embedded within the marrow and all that shit.
That's what they do, man. And if your eyes can't catch it, your ears can't catch it.
Well, the things about the fingers, right? Like these people who do that, what's that? That knitting or croqueting, whatever that stuff's called. You know what I mean? Where they got that needle thing, right? Crochet. Thank you. The crocheting, as well as like baton twirlers that move things through their fingers, right?
Yeah.
The fingers are connected to the brain. So in other words. It's total connect. That's the central nervous system. That's why if you have a player in, say, in basketball, and they can't, if they don't have no, like, they can't catch, right, or just get their timer, it's nothing you can do about it because that's all in the nervous system. You can't develop that.
Somebody just said something recently on TV about teaching young people how to what do you call it? You just mentioned it. Not the twirling, but when you do the three things at one time, what do you call that?
Does it have an instrument with it? Is it?
No. It's, you know, when it's flip up the pins, what do you call that stuff? Up and down, three at a time.
Juggling.
They did a piece on CBS with wide receivers juggling.
Ginobili did a training technique where they would throw the ball off a level. It's all brain work, right? All that is the brain, midbrain activity. That's why, if you get a player that, or whatever sports being like big, right? Oh, guy's 7'2", and he can't catch, right? or he doesn't have quick feet, he can't do shit. It's nothing you can do. It's in the nervous system, right? Those coordinates are not there. So Ali, when he could do the shuffle and let his hands go at the same time, showed his brain coordination function.
Those are cerebral signs. Think about this. How many times did Ali win a fight because he went into the shuffle and mesmerized his opponent just from looking at him? He wasn't looking at whether or not the right or the left was coming or whether the jab was keeping him back. He saw that footwork and was like, what?
Hyper-coordinating, man. Yeah, hyper-coordinating.
That's the one thing black athletes have been able to generate. They generated the science and enhanced the science. When Dr. J does that great move where he scoops on Larry Bird and a couple other players, and they always show it, and everybody goes, ooh, what they don't realize is that he's in a rhythm. And Grace Jones is one of my favorite artists, always talks about being a slave to the rhythm.
Pull up to the bumper, baby.
It's about being locked in when an athlete is in a groove.
My Jamaican guy.
Exactly. When Stephon Curry is hitting threes from
It's a total different thing. Mm-hmm.
It's all the synchronicity when the talent meets the moment, and all of a sudden, people are scratching their head. They don't know how to describe it. Well, you don't have to describe it. It describes itself.
Well, see, Dr. J did arrow. Dr. J, real quick, that's a great point to Dr. J. Now, the beauty about everybody nowadays, young people, they love the history, right? So they chew it up with the YouTube videos. So they'll go look at that stuff ad nauseum. Not everyone sleeps at the wheel, right? And so what Dr. J and Julius Irvin would do when he would take off, especially the next day's Virginia Squire Days ABA, and he wore the big fro, you always would see his fro blow back, right? No one, you've ever seen that with any other player. Larry Keenan had a big fro. There's an artist. Nobody's fro blew back like Dr. J. He was moving at the force of velocity at that point in time. Aerodynamic velocity, because his hair's getting pushed back. Natural fro. It's like it's wind in Nassau friggin' Coliseum. There's no wind. And Dr. J's bro would blow back.
That's right.
It would blow back. He's moving at a velocity frequency that's visibly identified by his hair blowing back like there's a wind gust. That is thermodynamics, aerodynamics, kinetic energy.
And guess who else? That changed the kind of movement we're talking about. Earl the Pearl Monroe with his dribble.
Yes.
It wasn't stimulated. Yes. But his dribble changed. Oh, Lord. And kids, for them, it's not pretty enough. No, but it's effective. Because they don't know how he did it. But
you know what? That's his thing. You see what I'm saying? Everyone's got their thing. That was his thing. You can't duplicate that if it's not your thing. You know what I mean?
See, if you ever get around Monroe and let him just listen to him talk about all that, he would tell you, one of the first things you got to accept from him is, I don't know what my next move is.
It just comes so naturally.
And naturally white, especially white guys are trying to quote, learn his secret.
Some friends and I were talking some time ago,
and one of the things that we kept coming up with is we do not know what we left in the ocean when we came over and even when we go back.
But you know what? It lives in you.
Yeah.
It lives in you no matter what. And the key no matter what, it lives within you. And you can pull that up. There's always a solution. So you can't deny what's in you. And all that power and force and energy, you got to get still. There's ways to do about that. We're not, that's a whole other thing. You go in a different direction. But that never dies. within you. You just hit the
nail on the head. One of the things that we as people got to do to learn is not go dig up
outside yourself.
Try to find the secret without. It's always still within. We don't know what they tried to destroy in the middle of passage.
Well, everything we're talking about. I mean, you know, why pick cotton all fucking day? Because it was the texture of your hair, so you can learn how to hate yourself. You know what I'm saying? So why pick it? It had nothing to do with, you know, the grain and Eli Whitney bullshit. And a lot of the stuff is not true anyway. So the thing is, though, where younger generations, they want to tap into these kinds of things, and they do. And so a dude like Berry Gordy, you know what I mean? You know, he's hanging out in Detroit, and you got all these people and all this musical talent showing up in Detroit. But he had his thing, right, in terms of, you know, right, wrong, or whatever you do. We all have that. But he will share to you something that's rare amongst people and why his thing holds tight and successful despite all the different things that have happened. He has verbally stated he felt like his goal was to help people reach their potential. And within that, if I helped them reach their potential, it would help me reach my potential. That's where the success lies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Win-win.
You see what I'm saying? That's what it's like. Now, if we have more brothers and sisters who said, like, you know what, and the coach, those who go to HBCU coaches did, or the great coaches always do, you know, if I can help you reach your potential, I reached mine.
Yep.
And that was the approach. And that's where the success and the longevity came in. Nowadays, I got my brand, my hype, I'm hooking up with DAA.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a streaming show. I got my cat. But who are you raising up?
Yeah. That's a question, Mike. Just to turn it, Mike.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure it out. I tried to talk to him last night, but we couldn't talk to him definitely once. That a guy could be 30 and 40 to get the thing and lose his job.
You're talking about a brother from the Buck.
I'm going
Griffin. Adrian Griffin.
Yeah, I'm going. Doc was his background. Maybe Doc was lobbying as well, but that's rare that a brother loses a job at corporate and a brother replaces him. Usually, it's a red board of an assistant coach in that place. But that whole scenario intrigues me on how it works. Because quite frankly, white boy had the team before he left. Did a great job, my opinion.
Goldenholzer. Mike Goldenholzer.
Well, I mean,
the backdrop to that is with Adrian Griffith, Seen Hog Rat, you know, long time ago.
Yeah, nice guy, too. Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, he was set up to fail. He had hired Terry Stoops to be, like, one of his top assistants. You know, Stoops coached at Portland, been fired, you know, several times.
Did he leave?
Yeah, he left because he didn't like Griffin. So he was undermined there well before he got started, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't have the locker room. And then there was a major, he didn't have the locker room, but he was being undermined. Even there was a major public personality that says he's on his way of getting fired like a week ago. But he had to drop because one of his colleagues ended up taking the job. Okay. And so Doc's no fucking good because he was undermined because he knew he was getting in the alignment to take that position. You know what I mean? At some point in time as well. So Adrian Griffin was a man with no home, no oasis, no landlocked for a long time, and he was in a failed position because they already knew that he was just literally just a brother on the side that was going to make it. Yeah, all the record, all that stuff makes sense, man, but that's pro sports, man. It's beyond doggy dog, you know, and he just got caught in the shuffle. The best part about that, they got to pay him his contract so he can chill, do some other stuff. Him and Budenholzer can get together because they're paying him, too. And Doc ain't cheap.
Yeah.
So the Bucks like paying coaches salaries where two are inactive that had winning records. Budenholzer won a title. Brother Adrian, I mean, I can't see him ever winning a coach in the NBA again. I can't see how he would feel good about anything because he literally got, you know, F SK, you know, he did.
But you got to remember that what gifts that they brought to the table, whether it was knowledge, whether it was physical skill, whether it was black.
Correct.
They couldn't handle it. There was always a codicil that went with this. It was like, I really don't like you. I really don't want you, but I know I need you. And that's where
we're at.
Where BASN has gone from the beginning to right now. We got to have you. So
well
we
said.
Have to deal with you. I want to add to the discourse a brother who I've known and become fond of. His name is Reggie Howell. And Reggie, he cracks me up sometimes. He adds some well-meaning humor. He adds some well-meaning humor in most situations. I love him like a brother. And I thank him for the time that he has put in. Reggie, are you there?
My name is Eric Sherman Lewis, the enemy, and I ain't getting no job this year. This brother goes to the general, and I'm standing here saying, what the ham sandwich is going on? Ron Rivera then went up to Philly and said, I want to be a defense coordinator. They said, get your ass up out of here. Well, I go to Dallas. Oh, hell no. Gentlemen, it's an honor and pleasure. But I got to ask the panel one quick question. It's sad that Europeans had to validate Lamar Jackson and now had to take up for him for the white supremacy and racism that now they see. And in Baltimore, they gave him the Negro treatment, saying, uppity Negro, how dare you have your mama do your contract? How dare you just go out here and look for the money? Who do you think you are? Do you think you're an intelligent black man? And those damn locks you got? And I got to admit, I came on the show, and I said, I would love to see the brother do corporate commercials if he do cornrows. Well, I have to apologize because the brother's doing his job. Yeah, I mean, we know Wall Street looks at certain things, but even the brother did cornrows, he might be doing a whole lot more commercials, but with the bag he got, the hell with the commercials. He's doing pretty damn good.
You got that right.
My apologies, because I fell into the trap of the Stephen A. Smith and the Europeans. What the hell do I know?
That right. Well said. Well said.
I can admit when I'm wrong. I was wrong, and I can admit it.
You were wrong last week when you all came down and played with
That's funny.
I had to hear from a Winston A. Lynn professor. I'm still mad that the Bullets traded Earl Primrose to the Knicks. I'm still hot about that.
A lot of folks are still mad at that.
Who are they, Reds? Baltimore Bullets? Capital City Bullets?
They're going to be the Virginia Bullets soon.
They go to VA. That's right.
Our governor said the Negroes is coming to Virginia, and we're going to put a lottery here. We're going to take all the DMV money. Just go with us, Negroes. The hell with that. We're going to get that football team down here, too. Negroes, arise.
Yep.
Here we come, Negroes.
2 miles down the road.
That's right.
There was a discussion this morning I heard that was really interesting. And when I tell you who put the fire in it, I know you're going to explode. They were talking this great conversation about the boy from Buffalo. What's his name? Josh Allen. And you know they had some discourse about his, you know, he was on Greenberg for about 10 minutes, you know, what he can do, and then somebody comes in and invites him in the conversation, and the person says, well, no, it wasn't Josh. I don't care what anybody says. Anybody say Josh? Don't know what they're talking about. You know who that was? Mel Kiper. Because
of course.
Mel Kiper, I put together that he was a generational quarterback. No taking away from the young man's ability, but all seems pretty right. Who has not improvised? Who's great yet? Who's done good?
They love that white boy. They got to protect that white boy. They love that white boy.
Mel Kiper, when Lamar Jackson was coming out there, I said he was a receiver.
Yes, he did.
He was a receiver. You know, and
don't
so,
get the general manager of the Colts. Don't forget him.
Yeah, he, he said he was a receiver, you know.
Well, you got to see, this is why a BASN exists, because you have to remember what we're dealing with. Russell Wilson was 5'11", and, of course, he was considered a backup. Now he has a Super Bowl ring and over 100 victories as a starting quarterback, and fucking Mel Kiper's bullshit ass, who pissed on him in the draft, said for any short white guy that's coming along, he has the potential to be another Russell Wilson. Get the fuck out of here. This is the kind of nonsense.
What no Doug Flutie? No Doug Flutie? I don't believe it.
Exactly. And to be totally honest, Doug's not white, he's Turkish. But that's another story. Having said all that,
getting the facts in the way of the argument. There you go.
The long and short of it is what the black athlete brings to the table, the white folks can't handle, because by the time they come to the table, the table's already been set. And they kind of
look
stupid.
Oh, it's set. Oh, yeah, it's set.
That Prescott line, too, going to get straight into Atlanta. That Prescott, let me out of here.
For real. Now think about this. A black man like Dak Prescott wins games. I mean, we don't mean.
How about those Cowboys?
He wins
games. How about
games.
Them Cowboys?
He wins games. They go into the playoffs. He wins playoff games. But, and you know, with black folks, there's always a but. But.
Yes, sir.
He
got
lots
of money. Lots of money. Skip Bell and said he had a cookout. He said halftime, he counts the cookout until everybody go home.
Well, you know,
that lost money. He's pissed.
There was this concept.
And then they want to get rid of Mike Tomlin. I still ain't figured out Mike Tomlin.
Hey,
the brother been winning.
Hey,
they had losing season, and they're trying to run him out of town.
Everything you're speaking to, Reg, the quarterback,
that was
leadership.
More media than anything.
Well, if you look at any leadership, be it Obama, be it Barack Obama, they were going to block him at every angle.
Well, we had the fire chief that called him a nigga. What you expect? You got this whole
Any coach, any leadership person who cannot die great within this construct, you know, and Dexter King, you know, Martin Luther King's youngest son recently passed.
Yeah,
and his sister, you know, Bernice was talking about a conversation.
Did the brother pass away? I heard his brother passed away. Did his brother pass?
Yeah, Dexter King. Yeah, he passed. The youngest
son. Peace and blessing to his soul.
Correct. You know, he stood up, and you know, there's been a lot of tragedy, the King family, and so with that, but they stand strong. But what we're talking about is the concept of what is missing a lot of times that can be crystallized here. Because the King family continues to take negative energy about what Martin Luther King did, and he's been dead 50-something years. Real quickly to the point, she made a statement when they were going through these stresses and pressures and living their own life and dealing with the father's legacy. She shared that her mother, the late, great Coretta Scott King, said, listen, I'm going to tell you, they're going to keep assassinating your father. Get used to it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Not assassinating him.
Yeah.
Okay? When you live in that lifestyle lane, that's what it is.
Yep.
You know, and so you
got
to be able to different fiber to deal with it. So any brother we see like Dak, it's nothing more he can do for Dallas. He wins the Super Bowl. It's still going to be Starback Town. It's still going to be Starback Town.
Let me put it this way.
You know what I mean?
Let me put it this way. Dak got off light because at least he got in the league, and at least he started and won games. There were some athletes whose aura was so powerful
that
they were fascinated by it, but they couldn't stand it at the same time. I refer to Eldridge Dickey. Dickey had to be without a
team.
I saw one time on TV. Without even seeing him, Eldridge Dickey had to be a bad motherfucker. Never mind the nicknames,
very
else.
Much so.
He must have carried a lot of strength with him because The Oakland Raiders did not hesitate. They drafted him number one. Remember how they made all this fuss about Jamarcus Russell and said he was a bust? They done the Elvish Dickey was drafted number one, first round. There was nobody who was second. He was first, even before Snake Stabler. The Raiders knew he was good. Just like Al Davis couldn't handle the fact that Marcus Allen was fucking his daughter, he couldn't handle the fact that Eldridge Dickey was better than Ken Stabler. So what did he do? He tried to go quarterbacky on him and turn him into a receiver. He tried to make him the first slash, and all it did was put Eldridge Dickey in a funk and a trick bag, and he descended into a drug-infused haze, and he was in there along with, unfortunately, Warren Wells. And I know this for a fact because Marlon Briscoe made all this out.
Marlon Briscoe got his name to admit in Denver. When Denver Broncos, we got three more quarterbacks. You can't play quarterback. So he went to Miami.
Joe Gilliam.
Yeah.
Thing.
That was a street joke.
Same thing.
Chuck Noll was so fascinated by Joe Gilliam. And then when Joe Gilliam won the job, Terry Bradshaw was butthurt. Now, I know he's got the Raiders and all that. I respect that. But
Terry
Joe
was
Gilliam was so bad that Bradshaw said, oh, please get me out of here. I can't beat this black man. I want to go somewhere else. And
to this day,
he says Gilliam was
better than he was, right? To this day, he says Gilliam was better than he was. To this day.
Yes. I remember that well. And plus, as a guy in Jersey City that played with the team, as was in Jersey City, what you said is all on point. He knew it.
Yeah.
He had somebody to look for him. Because he had the right complexion, right connection, and the image that they want at the quarterback. They want the league, even though they got brothers or diamond in the league, but they want the perceptual league of individuals who highlight what the league is about to look like what they want to look like. Case closed. That's why they want to make Josh Allen. It tells me how sometimes they make Josh Allen. He's on great plays. I said, ain't that what Cam Newton did? Really? Is that what he did? Come on, stop, y'all, stop.
I mean, this guy, what these Fox dudes, this Kevin Burkhardt, the way that he was rah-rah Siskumban Purdy was insane.
Yes.
It was beyond, I mean, my goodness, he kept trying to frame it because Jordan Love was dealing.
I heard it.
You know,
yes.
I mean, remember, I mean, Burkhardt was, I mean, he was beyond planted. He was trying to create a fake, fictitious narrative, like in his soliloquy all day long. And then Jordan Love, who shouldn't have been there, who unless LaFleur, Green Bay should have. I mean, the Niners got the quote unquote on field victory, but shit, the Packers lost that more than the Niners beat them.
What's his name you just mentioned? That boy he's been that golden boy for years.
Mm-hmm.
I met him when I come to
Jets. You talking about Burkhardt? You're horrible.
The game be over and it started with Mangini. Anybody asks a question? Oh, Eric, you answer first. Wait a minute. He's just a fucking big reporter. They more people around him. They set him up for the job.
That dude is terrible. I mean, he kept saying there was. I mean, in other words, will Purdy be able to bring him back? This is a great time for Brad Purdy to bring him back. I mean, that's not neutral journalism. It was like totally placated and
done
in such a way because they couldn't believe the youngest team, you know, who shouldn't be there with a 10-8 record, was dealing with the Niners. LaFleur screwed them. Their own coach screwed them. I know he's boys with Shanahan, but dang. You know, you gave him a free pass on that. You know what I'm saying? Because Jordan was dealing. I mean, they caught some really funny style plays. That 4th-and-1 where he didn't challenge the mark when they had the ball, right? Or didn't hand it off to was the kid, Jones, who was guaranteed to get that yard. He's going to have a Love sneak in, who's not that type of quarterback. Those are some really incredible questionable calls that was favoring the Niners. And, you know, that's why you wonder sometimes when you watch this shit, because it was not really a true support factor from LaFleur. And his boys came and balled. The Packers came in and balled out.
Yep. No doubt. Jordan Love scared the shit out of them. Mm-hmm. And he was making throws that even Aaron Rodgers couldn't have made. And
right.
I know those white fans in Green Bay did not like it, but you got to remember, in the beginning of the season, he came back from 17-0 and beat the Saints first week. Had up and down there, and then he went 6-2 the last part of the season, got to the playoffs, and whipped Dak Prescott's monkey ass face up when he beat the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs.
Jordan Love is 1 year ahead of Aaron Rodgers. But these people do not want to admit that.
They hung for it. They hung 40 of the Cowboys. Then they go to the Niners. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They just you know what I'm saying? I mean, they hung 48. I mean, and LaFleur again. He had to put Love back in the game because he went to his bench too soon, and the Cowboys made that little run. And then he had Love throw a pass. I'm like, yo, listen, he's got a perfect so-called quarterback rating. Hand the ball off on his third down. He had Love throw a pass. It was a drop. That one drop late fourth quarter, which should never have been called, kept him from having a perfect quarterback rating in his first playoff game that no one else had. That's sabotage. Fucking run the ball. You're taking fourth and one. And Frisco, that incomplete pass, took down his perfect quarterback rating.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not surprised.
This is what the black athlete has to run into. Not only are you faced with your own expectations, but the resentment and the anger that comes with what white supremacy throws at you as well. We can't do this. Oh, yes, we can. And you know damn well we can. And they did not want another Soul Bowl like they had last year with Hurts and Mahomes. But they may get one anyway. As
Mahomes they told the Eagles midway in the season, you ain't going to the Super Bowl. I believe they told them that.
They were 10-1, 10-1, and lost six of their next seven.
Yep.
They brought your boy back, Mike. They brought your boy back. They keep him. They find out about Savannah. They bring him back.
I'll say it for the record. Kevin, Nick Sirianni ain't shit. That boy ain't shit.
Son, you didn't play with the father suit, son. You got the father suit. Nothing.
Wow.
From your lawn.
The boys, and Lamar Jackson is the MVP, and if somehow Baltimore meets San Francisco, in the Super Bowl, Jackson whipped his ass too. And all of a sudden they'll say, well, he learned how to play quarterback. I hope he gets in front of all the microphones and says, fuck you. Because he knew how to play quarterback. You just didn't like the fact. Look, I compare Lamar Jackson to the musicians in Kool & the Gang. When Kool & the Gang first came out, they ran out with this serious form of funk. The science is so powerful. Everybody said, who are these guys? Lamar Jackson, when he does his thing, it's like, who is this guy? Exactly. Lamar Jackson he is the NFL version of Kool & the Gang. He moves at a speed and a rhythm that a lot of folks can't comprehend. But the science of what he does is so on point that his precision is immaculate. when he gets on the field. He made his point. And when he had to face the white boy, he whipped his monkey ass. The bottom line
and
is...
Sally on Sunday. Who do you think the marketing people that control the images of the league, who do you think they're rooting for Sunday?
Oh, they're going to go with Mahomes, of course.
Okay.
They're going to go with Mahomes.
Lamar Jackson.
Well, that's the real Super Bowl, right?
He suffers the
Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is Baltimore versus Kansas City. That's the Super Bowl. You know,
exactly.
Lamar's too dark.
He's too dark to be a hero. We can't have any black men as heroes. Like Patrick.
Well, it's a whole Raven complex, right? Because the word Raven connotes black. A Raven's all
you
black bird.
Never more will there be a black man being a hero. We're not having that shit. You know, we know at least Mahomes.
Well, you can, but we got to take you down afterwards, long term. Correct.
Right.
I think Detroit got a shot, but the Super Bowl is Baltimore, Kansas City. You know, in terms of the best out there, Niners are beatable. Friggin' Shanahan was 0-30 career-wise when trailing by 7 in the third quarter. 0-30.
Exactly.
Then he goes against his boy, and they get the Jordan Love. Uh-oh, we can't get this Green Bay pack, Jordan Love in. And all of a sudden it just goes downhill from there. Dude misses the field goal. It was just a strange game down the stretch, but that's all right.
No doubt about it. And, and on the other hand, you see the Buffalo Bills, white supremacist team.
Wide right.
They call their fans Bills Mafia for a reason. They represent
well, Gary,
the white.
You're just wrong, Gary.
They represent
wide right. I like
you
that.
You're just wrong, Gary. You're wrong. Bringing up old memories. You're wrong, Gary.
The Bills fans represent the whiteness of the NFL.
Red, white, and blue.
Everything that they did, God bless America, all that. Josh Allen, waving the flag, all that shit. That's Buffalo.
Yeah,
and when the kick was missed.
And they still scrubbing his account from racism and marks.
Joe Burrow. Every year somebody else comes up.
That's
why
they end up in the hospital bed in rehab.
Take your pick.
Well, Michael T ain't got to worry about the wide draft one anymore. You know why? That new stadium that they're going to build in Buffalo is going to be coming up.
Wait a minute. They're going to put a stadium? They're going to put a dome
over it? You got to have a dome.
Wait a minute. They are officially going to make it a dome?
Yeah.
Well, that's what
thank you. That's what Pat Freeman was fighting. Look, if they listened to Cuz 10 years ago, they would have had the Dome Stadium. They would have hosted the Super Bowl. That was over 10 years ago he was fighting for that. Thank you.
They dug the hole for it. Come on, they know what's happening. Or move to Canada. They ain't moving to Canada, so upstate New York put up about $670 million to help them out, make things work out.
That's right.
You better put that dome over it.
Well, again,
the AFC is a cold weather conference.
Yeah, if they want to keep their money, if they want to start making that money and start having them pay-per-view games, they better start putting them in dome stadiums.
And also, Rich, remember this, an indoor facility, you can augment the luxury suite there. So
Thank you. Corporate America, they will be getting $20 a pop to shove a snow out and free hot dogs and wings day before the game.
You better take it now. That's over.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but then again, you can also have the various indoor events where you make your money because it's a 17-game season, so it flip-flops every year. 8 home games, 1 game, 9 home games.
If Jerry can have a retractable stadium, they can open that stadium too.
Yep.
They want cold weather, open that bad boy up.
But when you think about it, this, when you think about there's only nine dates in that building officially, unless you go to the playoffs or eight. So there's flip flop. Eight home games 1 year, nine the next, eight, nine, flip-flop. So the thing is, where you're making money in stadium fairs, concerts, those monster events and all that other bullshit.
Yeah.
So you make more
on hockey.
Correct. Yep. That's where you make your money.
But how many times where both teams go in and out the same exit? You know, that is old-ass stadium. That was ridiculous.
Well, if you look at it like a place like, you know, what they call Jerry's World, or they host a lot of major bowl games.
They play pins.
Well.
And then they do matches. They sold out 100,000.
They also do a good Latino audience. Yeah, but they also do a good number of, say, high school events, collegiate events, stadiums.
Yep.
So they can convert it. So that's where you make your money, because if you look at Rick Stadium, if they still play it, or the stadium in Kansas City, it's only used eight times a year, not counting playoffs officially. That's the minimum time.
Remember, in some of those places they have high school playoffs. They have 20,000 to 40,000 people.
Yes, that's true. My first TV show was in Dallas. You're 100% correct.
I know in Jersey they use MetLife Field for state finals for high school football there. Right.
Yeah.
In California they have various. They don't get that many though. No, they don't get nowhere near that. But the Texas stadiums can fill it. You know what I mean? They also host that All American game, the Army All American game. Jerry's Place, right? Now, Houston's got a nice stadium where that's where the national championship was played, right, this year. It was played in Houston. So, again, when Staples was built, Staples Arena, right? Now, everything's pushing out to Inglewood, where the brothers and sisters are always up to no good in California love, right? So, in Inglewood, that was the place of the Forum, where the Lakers played for many years. Right. Wow. Inglewood is a historically black community in Inglewood, right? So that's where they built the stadium that houses the Chargers and the Rams. They did it the Staples way, where the Clippers and Lakers shared the same facility. Chargers, Rams share the same facility, right?
Right.
So that stadium they have in Inglewood, off the chain, all that good stuff. They hosted the Super Bowl there, but they also do a lot of other events like Staples. Staples is non-stop since L.A. is still an entertainment headquarters. Now, what's his name? The owner of the Clippers, the Microsoft dude. Ballmer.
Yeah,
Ballmer.
Yeah.
His pocket is deep. He sees his Clipper team. He'll throw all matter of money at it. He already did that with the ownership. Yeah. Back to Mike's point and a black athlete, what is this about Ballmer wanting to be around these brothers? So whatever dollar he can to own this team, and he really paid over the top for Sterling. Now he's lost out in Inglewood. It's tough because it's driving a lot of long-term people out of Inglewood because the housing market is with the stadium and the arena.
Eric, how far is the new stadium that's just going to be for Clippers from the Lakers people? How far is that from?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's nowhere. I mean, it's a quick drop. From Staples is downtown L.A., which was interesting because people had to stay away from downtown L.A. mindset, which is crazy when you look at it. But that's where Staples is, really in the hub of downtown Los Angeles. So Inglewood is not that far from downtown L.A. Traffic in L.A. is really funny style. It's not going to take you 20 to 30 minute drive between both places. All right, they're close. They're close. But Ballmer wanted his own. But Ballmer wanted his own.
Ballmer's own, yes. That was up next year, right? In September, right?
Yeah. And it's going to be like crazy because he's got like that Microsoft deep pocket loot, and he loves this Clipper thing. Like he sees this Clipper thing as almost like an extension of himself or fantasy, whatever you want to call it. But he's beyond all that. So, again, you know, it's going to attract more free agents, different things like that. But he wanted to cut loose from Staples. So now that's – because anyway, to be frank, I've been to both games. If you go to a Clippers game, say, on a Tuesday night, and let's say they're playing a hype team, you know, like say Boston or someone that's, you know, doing well in today's environment. This was years back, though, when Kobe was still out there putting in work, when I went to both two games in the same week. When you go to Clipper Stadium, right, everything's lit up, you know, in terms of the arena. It's a deep arena. It's a very nice arena. And it's
right.
a different crowd, completely different mm-hmm. crowd. Completely, same building, same ambiance. And then Doc mm-hmm. Rivers put up blockers over the Lakers banner, so you could never see none of their championship banners and their retired jerseys, right? You had to block off. Then you go to the Laker game, night and day. They black out the stadium seats like a theater. You know what I mean? The highlights on the court. And the crowd is completely different. Totally different environment, energy level, same building. You see what I mean? So the Clippers
like
fully locked that down. Sorry?
The Clippers had their own place. They had to have their own place. And Correct.
Correct. Because you're almost like the JV team.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The Lakers are the varsity. Clippers are like the JV.
Well, they're like the New York Knicks, the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah,
well,
Brooklyn,
Brooklyn's got their own thing out in Brooklyn,
The fan
bases
right?
are different, correct. Very different. The Garden is very different than what's happening in Brooklyn. But Lakers, it's like the Laker thing is night and day. I mean, it's almost like the Lakers operating a celestial NBA rather than the other team. And I'm like, if you look at that, it's like this scenario, like, if you want to be in the league and you want to be on the Lakers squad, then you're at that elite NBA plated level of the environment for an NBA player as a Laker.
Exactly.
And it's a big drop off with the Clippers. Same city, same town, but totally different.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, and guys, the Clippers are playing some ball.
Yeah.
They're playing some ball.
They're playing some ball, but you know they're still a victim of the fact that their style and who they are. To Eric's point, is exactly what kills them. They can't replace the Lakers in terms of being an item. They are what they are.
That's a good way of saying it, Mike. That's a great way of saying it.
And style wise, they ain't there. Unfortunately. That's something we'll have to reveal another time because we had final thought. I want to say, as always, the discourse has been great. Reggie, once again, I'm thankful to you for the humor that you provide and the insight. And I apologize for cussing all those times on the radio station.
Well, we're not on regular radio. It seems they should can cuss this podcast. We can cuss on this. And he's a multi-millionaire. Right?
That's funny.
Set it off, please.
Well, you know, it's interesting right now that we still had to get white validation for athletes. And we've been fighting for Lamar Jackson over and over again.
Yeah.
Been fighting for a black quarterback. Shout out to the Raiders and New England Patriots for taking a stand as far as their coaching hire. And I thought that the wheel turned slow, but it turned. Now this next cycle, let's see if any more brothers get a shot. Hell, we're ahead of the game already. We still a long way to go. General managers ain't been hired. And then we have other positions. But getting back to Jerry Arkansas Jones, I ain't going to let it go. This clown has shown his Barry Goldwater clan servant itself. Once again, he shows that it's all about barn and belly, a sucker's born every day. And for him to not come out and say, Jack Prescott is our quarterback, and I'm going to go ahead and back him, says volumes. He sure enough went ahead and backed his coach rapidly, but now all of a sudden discourse is in the club, and somebody's going to get hurt behind this foolishness. All I'm saying is beware, because when your family members start going into money, then you start having major problems because you mess with people's bank now. I'm sure Eric and the guys can back me up on that. You start talking about people millions of dollars, somebody gonna get
and
hurt.
And their mama involved. And their mama involved.
And the sister too. Yeah, somebody gonna get hurt.
See you in Atlanta, Dak. Patrick.
Real quickly, I'm in the car. I'm getting ready to go inside, but. I was preparing for this game on the field.
You're that Bugatti, man? You're in that big Bugatti?
I might not be able to get in now because I was talking to one of the organizers. The game is going to be on TNT. First game is going to be a Jackson Grambling. Second game is going to be Howard and Hampton. For what they've done, they had over 162 requests for press. They only have 30 people for press. Because TNT has taken up a bunch of press areas along with some other entities that they have from small
TV now.
But what's happening is it's already a sellout. But the fact that it's on TNT lets me know that they've done some right things to really promote the game well.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be something to think about, and it's gonna be a good game. At least it should be a good event.
So 1 o'clock. The first game is Grambling and Jackson State at 1 o'clock, and Hampton and Howard come on up to
it. And you know what, Patrick? It doesn't hurt that they get tips from listening to us as well, because I did see that. I go, lo and behold, look at this.
Mm-hmm. Well, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What a coincidence.
Well, mm-hmm. Professor, if you're going to the game, be safe. If not, take care. And I look forward to when the weather's warmed up. We all getting together and breaking bread, so you have to go into the smokehouse and break out a couple of racks of ribs. Good, Professor.
That's it.
Well, first of all, let me say congratulations and many, 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 many more shows over the next few years. Then I want to congratulate my nephew for making McDonald's All-American.
Awesome.
All right.
And,
congrats.
He's already signed a play. He's already signed a play with Duke. And I mentioned before, his name is Isaac Evans. And then we also have Mr. Jackson Phil, who's going to who's also going to Duke to play lacrosse. Bless his heart. He's still trying to get us to understand the game, but you know he enjoys it. He's very, very, very good at it.
Excellent.
A few days ago, I ran across this piece on YouTube, and you know how we talk about various subjects, and I've told you about the jackass we have running for, who's running for governor here in North Carolina, but once he said something that makes sense, and I'll give you the short version. He was talking about reparation and why it shouldn't be.
Uh-huh.
He said, and he uses the same basic language everybody else does and why it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing he said that I agree with is that we owe a debt to our generation owe a debt to those people because who went through the Jim Crow, the slavery, Jim Crow and all the other stuff. And I said, yeah, I can go with that, but we got to tell both sides. Now, he's right about that. So I said, no, I agree with him because most of us in that age group where we saw our parents do some things to keep us safe and healthy that we don't have to do now. And
that's
so, we owe homage to them in utmost respect. But to say slavery was not, you know, your white friends don't owe you nothing. Yes, they do. Because
yes,
they're
they
still
do.
Profiting
right.
from the interest.
Yes, they
and,
do.
You know, America,
right.
America is built on and around interest. And it's because there's those interests, you know, every time you see a Ford, that's interest. Because Ford has been out over 100 years. Every time you look at all these different TV stations and all the other things that are out there, yeah, we owe, but they owe too, and they owe a bigger measure because
they
they're the ones
profiting. You're right, Fred. They owe a lot more. As an American descendant of slavery, I am also an American survivor of slavery. As far as I'm concerned, cut the motherfucking check and shut the fuck up.
And tell him, Mike, and tell him, Mike, what reparations? Take the reparations that Israel got. Take the reparations that Japan got. Take the reparations from Germany got. Don't get me started.
He's the reparations that Trump got.
Thank you.
Japanese internment.
Thank you.
They got paid.
Jewish refugees back in 1945.
Yep.
And the white folks who took over Oklahoma and they gave them the free money and land, that's reparations.
That's right.
I mean, Dr. King speaks about the myth of pull yourself up by the own bootstraps.
There you go.
Because he said there's never been a group in this country there's never been anyone in this country that pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. And that's reserved for us. But there's no ex-slaves here because we're far greater than that, and we descend well past that. And when we don't do the slave narrative no more and supersede to our cultural roots, the Middle Passage was a short period of time based on our longevity and breadth and bandwidth of our greatness. So to lock us into a few hundred years is bullshit. Because our culture is infinite, so we don't operate on a specimen level defined by society and see us in one-dimensional way. And they can tell the people who live that standard by how they move and how they talk, like yours truly, you know what I mean, and others, like we talk. We don't operate like no slave fucking culture. And so what? There was a little bit of kidnapping bondage bullshit. But we even kicked that in the ass because we weren't following the right rules. So you deserve to get fucked up like we got fucked up because we denied our own self and got gaudy and angry. So when you push back, and when I went to Kemet, when I've been to the continent many times, well, several times, I want to word it that way, I was just totally looking for why is it so effed up with my brothers and sisters in America? I literally went there like on a research mission in my own mind that I didn't share. And when I seen what we gave up for a Social Security card, I understood the hell. All right? I understood it. Because we have it all under our feet and didn't manage it the right way. All right?
Yes,
now we can. All of it. All of it. I was blown away. And that's why there's so much talent there that will never be allowed to come into this country because it's original. But it still exists within you. And they see that. So they don't care what your religious background is. They don't care what your faith is. Any sign that connects you to your ancient super self has to be deterred. That's what they look for. They could care less about those concepts and these terms. They're looking for that God in you. God is in you. All right? Isn't it written in your book, ye are gods, not ye are thugs, ye are punks, ye are snoops, ye are bitches, ye are hoes, ye are drunkards. No, it's not right. Ye are a superstar, ye are a three-point shooter. That's all small smithereens to the greatness that lies within. And so that's what's being looked for. When they go to you and they do these DNA tests and these fools go do these DNA tests and they call all this data on you, they want to see which genes are waking up because it's been a flip. There's DNA explosions. It's coming online. You can't stop the natural forces. 7 out of 10 children in the next 20 years across this globe will be from the continent. They beat Ebola. They beat AIDS. They beat overthrows. They beat wars. They beat all that. They beat abortion. They beat all these, you know, female mutilations, all this shit, and it's still striving and glowing, and that's how it is. And then there's other people who have a birth rate that is descending. That means they are no longer the dominant culture because they're not having children. They're caught up in homosexuality. They're caught up in career. They're caught up in other things. And so they're not producing children. And when they do adopt, it's usually a black child because that's what's available. And now they struggle with the immigration thing, which is de-seeding America to continue to flip the racial bylines on the whole overall thing. And it's just what's happening right here under your nose. It ain't nothing you got to do but sit back, chill, and raise your own soul and raise your own energy and raise your own power. That's all you got to do.
Come on.
It's handled. It's handled.
It's handled. That's a nice way of putting it. It's handled. I love it when you talk metaphysics, brother. The shit is handled.
It's handled. You've done your work. You're standing here. Fred makes a great point. You know, it's and we can all relate to this because we're in a similar age group. You know, balancing the concept of saying, of looking at my parents and how they taught me to be really neutral, but really about my proactivity, about my culture and pushing the culture envelope on me. Pushing, you know, I mean, remember Like It Is, us East Coast heads with Gil Noble?
Yeah.
You know, remember with Gil, I mean, I was forced to watch that shit. Fuck NFL football on Sunday. You're going to watch Like It Is with Gil Noble, you know?
That's right.
And get raised up and being taken to all these beautiful black events and cookouts and brothers and sisters just hanging and dancing and listening to music. Remember how those things used to be? Playing softball and hoop. And other parents, like, you know, like everyone felt like an uncle and this, that, and the other. And there's none of those beautiful souls that supported that grew up where they seen these signs up, saw color, white, that they live into the signs, you know. And they took some signs down, but they lived under that. And they lived the life of that. And yet there's no harm. So when people say this thing about reparations and – you know, I've won your team. Well, I was told this. If someone from that team shares to you that they're on your side, and I have black friends too, if they don't have the John Brown support mentality, they're not on your squad. They got to ride with you like John Brown did.
That's right. Cut the check. I don't hear any other shit. Just cut the fucking check.
John Brown was raising hell for righteousness. If a person that says that... You know, under a corporate environment, as you sit here at Starbucks, you're being played.
There you go. Yay.
Yay.
Okay, we're in 2024. The Chargers just hired Joe Harbaugh.
Jim.
Hired Bill Callahan. The Raiders hired Antonio Pierce. Patriots are Gerard Mayo.
Jet Mayo.
There are four teams left. They are eight African American head coaches. Six African American coaches. I would like to see eight or nine African American coaches in 2024. I mean the Commanders, the Falcons, the Panthers, the Seahawks, the Giants open. Now, as you know, Eric Bieniemy is in Washington, D.C. Eric Bieniemy has been looked over three or four times. I think it's time for Eric Bieniemy. Hey, coach. Falcons, you're the worst team in football, and fans are right behind you. So, what do you have to lose? 2024, I need there to be more African-American coaches in the National Football League, a.k.a. not for long. There we go. 1 o'clock Saturday.
There you go, G.
Who's the musical battle, G?
It's a shame because these four teams, the Commanders, Falcons, Panthers, and Seahawks, the Commanders and Panthers, it should be a no-brainer. It has to be a no-brainer.
It should be a no-brainer.
Gotcha.
It should. But, you know, gentlemen, I've enjoyed this as I always enjoy it. As we're sitting here, hopefully they are working on making the repairs to the site as we had a couple of incidents happen. But one thing I've always had to consider ever since I was in my state, that I have somebody watching my back. She's got great legs, and she's got even a greater mind. She happens to be my wife, and I'm blessed to have her. And now that I'm doing her, I'm going to be naughty tonight, and it looks like Dr. Feelgood is going to make a house call. So, without any further ado, I'll see y'all later.